Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife.
Marie.
And you are going in Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
Yeah, welcome to Going In Raw View. It's the show of the week on Sundays where we review stuff. We review old pay-per-views.
Yes.
Yeah, we put three up for our $10 and up patrons every week, and then they vote on them, and then we watch it.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah. So last week, we put up three pay-per-views that were produced around the same time as Bash of the Beach 94, which we reviewed last week.
Yes, the three up for vote were King of the Ring 93, Royal Rumble 94, and In Your House 3 Triple Header from 1995.
This was so we can kind of compare and contrast where both companies were at their respective times. Now, sort of typically when we review something, we like to give a brief overview before we get into the minutia. Which company was doing better at the time of these?
Yes.
The answer is WCW.
Yes.
They had Hogan. They had Flair. They had Terry
Sting.
Funk. Bunkhouse Buck.
Sting.
Pretty sure they did not
Luger.
Have...
Luger. No, they did not
they
have
didn't
Luger.
Have Luger. No, oops. They didn't have Luger. Luger wasn't here, though.
Maybe this might have been after he showed up at the Mall of America.
This was
September of 95.
Yeah, this was, yeah. So, yeah, so Nitro had already
Luger was in WCW.
They had Nitro? Did they have Raw yet?
Yeah, Raw started in 93.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay, before. Okay. But it was kind of obvious. This was hot off the heels of the steroid trial that Vince had gone through.
It was
about a year
or
after.
4 years after. Steroid trial was 91, 92, wasn't it?
That was 94, wasn't it?
I thought it was early 90s.
Steroid trial, WWF, 93. So we're both kind of right. Let's see here. So he was indicted in November of 93.
Okay.
So yeah, the trial, I was right. The trial was 94.
Okay.
So because of that, Vince, the company wasn't on too solid of ground.
No, I believe they were having shows in smaller venues.
Wasn't able to afford
the production value.
Yeah,
wasn't that hot?
No, it wasn't. The In Your House set specifically was pretty bunk.
Yeah,
they had like the facade of like in front of a house.
Yes, and where the garage door would be, they had like the curtain.
Curtain.
Also, yeah.
Instead of a garage door,
At least at the front door, they had an actual door.
They have that going for them. Oh, man. So anyways, by the way, I take issue with all you patrons out there voting for this one when I clearly said I wanted to watch Clash of the Champions 9. Was it 9?
No, I think
14?
It was 14.
14?
The one with the Shockmaster.
Debut the Shockmaster. I'm going to get this on that show, on this show one day. But anyway, I'm joking. I love you guys. So anyways, yeah, like you said, the production value wasn't that great.
Vince was on commentary.
So that was terrible.
Yeah, he's not a good commentator at all.
Not good at all.
Overall, the vibe was far cheesier than WCW.
Yeah, you could tell Vince, still at the time, was kind of out of touch. He was doing things. You know, WCW, Bash of the Beach, say what you will, there was some big fight feel to what they were doing.
And granted, that was the case because it was the first time that Hogan and Flair ever wrestled
big
on television.
Fight, big
yeah.
fight.
It's a
yeah.
huge event. There really wasn't a huge event at In Your House 3 Triple Header.
They were just grabbing at pay-per-view
money. It was a two-hour show.
It felt like a Raw.
Yeah, it felt like a Raw. It
basically just felt like a Raw. Even like the main event was weird and like the thread of where's Owen. Did they ever explain where he was?
On Wikipedia, it said that he was at the hospital because one of his children were being born. But then he shows up at the show anyways.
Like there was that razor thin. It was like a 2 hour thing. Hey Vince, I could show up for the last 5 minutes of the show.
Maybe, I don't know.
But for the preceding 2 hours, the hour and 55 minutes, I'm gonna be at the hospital.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's just weird. So anyways, like you say here in your first line of notes here, Vince was on commentary.
No, it says, oh no, Vince is on commentary.
Vince was so weird. I noticed this, and I always kind of noticed it, but I was able, because I was paying attention, I'm able to articulate it. During the finish of any hot match, and the crowd, it was actually a really good crowd.
Yeah, it was a good crowd.
The crowd, well, look, man, the crowd was diehard WWF.
Yes.
Because they were presented with a lot of crap, and they were all into it. They were presented with DiBiase getting vomit shoved on his head, dumped on his head, and they popped for it. Whenever there's a finish to a match and it's hot, Vince goes into a voice that isn't back then that it wasn't, it wasn't that yet. He was getting there, but it wasn't that. But you couldn't understand what he was saying. That's all you heard.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was saying.
I know. And a lot of times, if I didn't know better, I wouldn't think he actually knew anything about professional wrestling. Because half the time, someone does a move, and he'll say, well, that was a spectacular move. Well, he didn't know what the names were.
That's what, when we're playing WGPW and Fun Wrestling, often, because I'm terrible with moves also, that's actually where I learned how to commentate, is from Vince McMahon. Because if somebody does, like, okay, I know what a Russian leg sweep is, but say I didn't, I'll say something like, driving the back of his head to the mat. That's what Vince did a lot.
Yeah.
It was just, crushing maneuver. Yeah. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know the names of the moves.
He'd been around
the industry forever.
Yeah. Didn't know the names.
So anyways, let's kick off the beginning. There was the singer was good. I don't know who she was. No, never mind. I'm sorry. There was no singer.
No.
You know what happened, though?
I was very confused for a moment.
I know. I was confused this morning. So this morning I watched the main event, because yes, I had seen everything but the main event.
Yes.
And then it ended, and I think I kept it playing. And so the following In Your House played. And I thought to myself, wait a second, did I just miss this my first go round because I was in the kitchen or something? And then I realized that no, they were. And then Gorilla Monsoon showed up, and he was saying that Shawn Michaels was vacating his IC title because he got beat up by a bunch of Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, this is the next one. So, you know, scratch that. I'm going to keep that in the podcast, though.
Okay.
Fine with my mistakes.
That's fine.
I live with them, Larson.
Good.
Anyways, first up, we had Savio Vega versus Waylon Mercy, a.k.a. kind of a cooler Bray Wyatt.
A precursor to Bray Wyatt. Bray said, I believe, that one day Dan Spivey, the man who played Waylon Mercy, was at the Performance Center and gifted Bray Wyatt that gimmick.
That was a great gift, man.
I know.
Because that was a really cool... Here's the difference between Bray Wyatt and Dan Spivey. Here's the thing. Bray Wyatt is a much better wrestler. I really like Bray's in-ring product. And he's a supremely gifted mic guy. We know this about Bray Wyatt. His problems have been booking. Dan Spivey, on the other hand, see, Bray Wyatt looks like he should be in season one of True Detective.
Yes.
He's got he honestly has a Hollywood vibe.
Yeah, he does.
He could be like, if they rebooted NYPD Blue, he could be Sipowitz.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Spivey, on the other hand, he looked legit.
Yeah,
he didn't look like an actor.
No.
He looked like, if you watch one of those old documentaries on like cults, like what was that dude's name? Not Jim James. Jim James is My Morning Jacket.
Jim Jones, right?
Jim Jones. Thank you. Yeah. Like, he has that vibe.
Yeah.
He comes down. He looks legit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once he gets in the ring, he's kind of goofy because he lumbers a lot.
The first thing I thought of is, how old is Dan Spivey in 1995? I looked it up. He was 42 years old. He looked older than that.
Yeah, but I think he gimmicked his hair.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, because he shaved it up at the top, I think.
Maybe,
because it looked like, I mean, that looked like part of the character.
Yeah.
But maybe he was legit going bald. I don't know. But yeah, I could see. I mean, yeah, they're wrestlers.
Yeah.
And Dan Spivey especially. Wasn't he known for being kind of a stiff worker too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he
was. We watched a show a while back, I think for...
he was Scott Hall's first tag team.
He was one of Sid's early tag team partners. Yeah. They were the Skyscrapers. Yeah. Watched, I forgot what show it was. some show with Dan, and there was that weird battle royal where there was two rings.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he powerbombed, I think, Shane Douglas and just about dropped him on his head. But yeah, he was a stiff worker.
He was cool though, man. Like it's difficult for somebody to pull off like white pants and a white wife beater, but he did it, and he had like a cool like weird.
It was a takeoff on De Niro's character in Cape Fear.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I thought it was really cool though. I thought it was decent. Did I have any note? I don't know if I wrote any notes on him. Yeah, no, I liked it. I said Waylon Mercy is my new favorite. What a great name, too.
Yeah, it's a great name. There was a lot of Doc Hendricks.
This was a very Doc Hendricks.
In the show.
I still don't get that. I still don't understand. You have Michael P.S. Hayes.
Well, here's the weird thing. I looked some of this up, and maybe we've talked about this before. After Michael Hayes' long and very successful career, he had to try out for the WWF.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember reading that. What?
And then after that tryout, he decided to retire because he had a back injury.
Aww.
And so they brought him on as the interviewer, Doc Hendricks.
Doc Hendricks. What the hell?
So weird.
That is so weird. I mean, I get trying to separate your company, but God, you have Michael Hayes, man. He's a free bird.
I know.
And he's Doc Hendricks? No, he's not.
So he made his first appearance in the middle of this match. They go backstage in the locker room.
There was a lot of... Doc Hendricks was like a supreme journalist on the scene guy.
Yeah.
He was bringing breaking news.
I kept track of all of his appearances.
You said there was five, right?
Five, yes.
Yeah.
So we interrupt the match, go backstage to the locker room, and apparently Owen Hart, who was scheduled to compete in the main event, isn't in the arena yet. Apparently, that's a huge deal. His match is still 2 hours away.
Their call time was probably like three. In storyline, did they ever give a reason for that? Because I was kind of half paying attention.
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, but...
During the show, no.
You looked it up on Wikipedia.
And it said, that legitimately that he was at the hospital with his wife because she was having a kid.
I mean, no, it's not like... They could have invented some storyline reason.
Yeah.
I mean, because that'd fly today. But back then, it's like, you don't want to know that's happening. That's a bit too, you know, the Family Guy. Nobody cares about that. So it could have been something cooler like, oh, he got hit by a car, you know, which would have made his...
At one point, like, Gorilla Monsoon is talking, one of the later backstage segments.
I love Gorilla Monsoon, by the way.
He's great.
He's great.
Asks Jim Cornette where Owen Hart is. And Cornette says, well, he's here. And Gorilla Monsoon says, in the arena? No. So that was funny.
Oh, I love Jim Cornette, man. He's great.
Anyways, back to the...
You know what? You know, okay, so here's the thing about Jim Cornette. Because he'll say stuff about wrestling that I simply don't agree with. The difference between a guy like him, I don't believe for a second that Cornette is trying to get attention with his opinions. I just think that he has a certain... way of thinking about wrestling based on his lengthy experience in the field. And he's one of those guys I would never say, no, you're wrong, Jim Cornette. I disagree with some things that he says, but this dude is as legit as it gets.
He might want a little bit of attention.
On the other, well, okay, here is my juxtaposition.
No, though. I know where you're going with this.
On the other, you have a guy like Vince Russo.
Who wants all the attention.
Who literally just acts like he spews crap that he doesn't actually believe simply to boost his podcast numbers, just to get attention.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the difference. Like a key difference. That's why I actually respect the crap out of Jim Cornette, because regardless of what he says about how he feels wrestling should be, they're usually 9 times out of 10 valid opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like, hey, people want to know, and he says.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. But anyways, I mean, this match was not all that great. Dan Spivey, like you said, the point you illustrated with his powerbomb and Shane Douglas was kind of still a player. He wasn't like a fantastic, you know, wrestler.
No.
We weren't going to get like a 5-star out of him.
No.
Savio Vega was serviceable.
Yeah.
I don't remember him being all that great either. I don't really remember much about Savio Vega. He's like one of those guys that, like, when I started watching around 97, 98... he was kind of almost not there anymore.
Yeah.
So I missed anything interesting about him, but I never really saw anything interesting about him.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we went back and watched these old ones, I'm like, yeah, I know he feuded with, he was like Stone Cold's big first feud.
Yeah.
That's all I kind of know about him.
I don't remember much about him either. According to Wikipedia, Dan Spivey tried to be a model after he retired from wrestling.
Interesting.
which was shortly after this match.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. Did he retire because he was like just injured?
Beat up.
Beat up, yeah.
Yeah.
He looked beat up.
Yeah, he did look
That's
beat
why
up.
The Waylon Mercer thing was so good on him.
Yeah. Anyway, Savio Vega wins with a spinning heel kick.
Yeah, Black Mass, baby.
Well, wasn't quite the same thing.
Okay, so then we have Doc Hendricks once again in the locker room.
Yeah, this is when Jim Cornette says, Owen's here.
Yeah.
And Gorilla says, in the building? No.
No. That never gets old. That's great. Mr. Fuji and Yokozuna, who at this point had ballooned up. So apparently at his heavy, so he got to like 660 pounds.
Yeah.
And this was after he peaked as like, you know, champion.
Yeah.
And he was sort of on the climb, like a year later, he wasn't even there anymore.
Yeah.
So then we had Psycho Sid, and I'm sorry, but like Psycho Sid's menacing music contrasted with him walking out of the facade of a suburban house.
I know.
Is too hilarious.
Through a curtain garage door. This is before he started.
I really wish they would have gone all the way with this. And whenever anybody walked out of the garage, they had some sort of garage specific tool. Like Sid comes out with a lawnmower. Somebody has some edge trimmers.
Yeah. Snowblower.
Exactly.
This is before Sid really started doing a lot of the Psycho Sid stuff.
Yeah.
Because he just kind of ambles out.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't doing fist bumps or anything like that at this point, or looking really sweaty or intense or anything
he
like that.
He was still pretty sweaty, though.
Yeah,
he was still sweaty.
He wasn't doing the
stuff
like he
trying
would.
To actively generate sweat.
Yeah, yeah. Like he did was 2 years later.
Right, totally. Big dude, though. Like, still Sid.
Yeah.
Big dude.
Yeah.
Ambles about the ring.
Not a great wrestler.
No.
He's got a bit of charisma, though.
He does. Like, just his face is so charismatic.
Yeah.
He fought Henry Godwin.
Yes.
Who's supposed to be like a yokel. Like a...
Pig farmer.
A pig farmer.
And his theme song is him talking to... Like, there's music, but it sounded like a lot of him trying to talk... Like, corral pigs or something?
Corral pigs, right.
Yeah.
It was like a banjo, wasn't it?
Something like
that. And
then
him corralling pigs.
Yeah.
But then, from what I understand... He used to carry around a bucket of his own vomitus.
Well, they called it slop.
Okay.
It's supposed to be, I guess, maybe something pigs eat. I don't know.
It just looked like Campbell's soup. It looked like some creamy soup.
With some vegetables.
With some veggies
stuff
in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought that's cool.
It's like cream of mushroom.
You like, what is slop? What do pigs eat?
I don't know.
Do they eat poo-poo?
No.
No. Slop isn't poo-poo.
No.
Slop is some sort of eatable concoction.
Edible, yes.
If you and I got on a plane that then crashed in the Andes and everybody died except for you and me, but we happen to have a giant bucket, like a giant...
A choice between slop and eating you. Is that what you're going to ask me?
Yeah. Could we sustain off slop? I don't know what slop is.
I don't know. I'm guessing it's just kind of like the odds and ends of whatever you didn't use at dinner.
Oh.
So like, you know, like...
There you go.
So... You know, if you cut the bad parts out of a potato, you put that in the slop bucket. You know, like a fatty part of meat, toss that in the slop bucket.
Okay.
That's what I'm guessing.
It's funny because I it says here, I looked up slop and then it said feed slops to an animal, especially a pig. But what is slop? Like, what do you put in the bucket? I don't know, man. That's
here we go. Hold on.
Oh.
From reference.com, what is in pig slop?
I love that. I like there's a video on YouTube. How to make a good pig slop.
Pig slop.
So in our plane, I'm hoping that we have good slop.
All right. Apparently, I have no internet connection right now, I guess. From the Google results, pig slop is made of a variety of foods and is usually a mix of grains and produce.
Mm.
It often includes foods like watermelon rinds. Sorry, melon rinds.
Okay.
And stale other stuff.
So I'll dig on some watermelon.
So you have grain,
yeah.
Some kind of the stuff you don't eat from produce.
Oh, so we're good.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
We're just, you know.
Although, like melon rinds, they give you diarrhea.
Oh,
you
okay.
Eat too much of it, I believe.
Okay, well, we'll just have to ease up on those, but we'll be good so we don't have to eat people. Anyways, he had a bucket of slop with him. I like your note here. Sid had the gentlest powerbomb ever.
He really did. There was a video package that preceded this match. And he power bombs, I think, Henry Godwin. And he looks like he's just laying him down.
Yeah. One thing I noticed at this point, well, we talked earlier about production value, and the ring apron was just wrinkly as shit.
I know.
Like, nobody ironed that thing.
No, they didn't care.
They didn't, like, leave it out in the sun, maybe.
Or put it, you know, like, turn the shower on real hot. in the bathroom and just hang it up in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Something yeah. Do like something yeah. to get the kinks out of that, dude. So anyways, Sid ended up going over with a very gentle power bomb. So at that point, DiBiase and Sid were fighting over the slop bucket because they both wanted to put it on Godwin.
Yeah.
They couldn't figure out. And, but then Godwin, showed up and took advantage of their disarray.
Well, also, Bam Bam Bigelow comes out.
All of a sudden it turned into like a hoss fight. Cause Bam Bam comes down and then Kamala comes. No, Kama.
Yeah.
The Godfather, sex trafficker, comes down, and they all start getting into it. They double-team Sid. Meanwhile, Godwin grabs the slop bucket and pours it all over DBI and dumps the bucket on his head.
Yes.
DiBiase's head.
I'm very interested in pig slop now. It says, leftover foods that make up pig slop may include scrap foods that humans don't eat, from cucumber peels to apple cores.
I'm sure we can eat that stuff, though.
Yeah. You don't want to eat too many apple seeds, though. It'll give you a tummy ache.
Yeah, but, you know, better than people.
Cucumber peels are good. I like the peel on my cucumber.
Oh, I'm not big on that, but I'd rather eat that than human.
Yeah.
Than human finger, for example. Or thigh. Probably go for the thigh.
Yeah, you want a meaty.
You want, a
meaty part.
You want thigh.
Buttocks.
Buttocks. The glute.
Yeah, that's the largest muscle in
Asshole.
Your body, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
So it might not be tender,
right?
But it's nutritious,
right? Exactly. So, anyways, next up, Doc Hendricks is back on our
third appearance
with more breaking news.
Yes. So, still no Owen, but Gorilla Monsoon says to Jim Cornette, "You have two options tonight. Either Yokozuna can go out and compete by himself, against the top singles champs in WWF." Diesel, Shawn Michaels.
Oh, by the way, we have to mention what the stipulation was for the main event.
Get to the main event.
Oh, well, it kind of helps.
All the belts are on the line.
This is a threat. Exactly. So it's a tag team match between the tag team champions, Yoko and Owen Hart, versus the WWF champion, Diesel, Kevin Nash, and Shawn Michaels.
Who was the Intercontinental champion.
Right,
yes.
Exactly, before he got beat up by some Marines.
Yes, yeah, so if either of Yokozuna or Owen Hart pinned Diesel or HBK, they would get their respective belt.
That person, whoever
for example,
got the pin.
Yeah, if Yokozuna pinned Diesel, he would not only retain the tag team championships, he would also be the new WWF champion.
Right, exactly. And then, but of course, then if, you know, conversely, if Diesel and Shawn Michaels, if any of them get the pin on Yoko or Owen Hart,
they would be tag team champions.
Right, exactly.
So, Gorilla Monsoon says, all right, you have two choices. Yokozuna can go out there and compete by himself, or you can go out there and find yourself a new tag team partner.
Right.
And Gorilla Monsoon said, I will sanction the match so that the new partner is officially a tag team champion.
For that match.
And if they scored the pin, they can get the belt of whoever person they
pin. Can I just say, I always like that kind of the Gorilla Monsoon and then Jack Tunney stuff where they would sanction the matches.
Very official.
It was very official.
I know. I
like
that too.
About it. Yeah. I mean, I know they do that now with Shane and stuff, but I feel like
it was different coming from Gorilla Monsoon or Jack Tunney. It felt they had more gravitas about him.
They were the president.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Gravitas, exactly. Let's see here. Then we had
the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith,
mm-hmm.
versus Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah. This is just a decent match. These guys are good.
Yeah, it was okay.
Good workers. At one point, we cut to Cornette backstage talking to Sid, assuming he's trying to convince the big man to partner up with Yoko. Hey, if he gets Sid, that's an easy sell, I would think.
And that there's story there, because prior to this, Sid was HBK's bodyguard.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Before Shawn Michaels turned face, teamed back up with Diesel to form Dudes with Attitudes.
Oh, yeah.
Can we rename our podcast Dudes with Attitudes?
I will almost guarantee there's already a podcast named Dudes with Attitudes.
Let's find out. Half the show is just us Googling stuff.
Dudes podcast. Yep, it's on Vimeo. there's one, the Friendship Podcast. But then there's, the Dudes with Attitudes. There's a video podcast Facebook page that has 487 likes. But then, there's Dudes with Attitudes on. Oh, yeah, it's a wrestling one, too. Wowie wow. Let's see if it's actually a video podcast or it's just hosted on Vimeo. Wow, it looks like it's actually. Are they talking?
That book signed.
Oh, yeah, they're talking. Okay. So I think they're just actually like in real time reviewing the shows.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool. It's only 45 minutes. Anyways, moving on.
British Bulldog versus Bam Bam. Bam Bam was a member of the Million Dollar Corporation before this match. This show happened after WrestleMania 11 when Bam Bam took on Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, yeah, so he was a hot commodity.
Yes. He turned face, Bam Bam did, taking on a heel British Bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a bad match. Here's one juxtaposition between WWF and WCW. Yeah. At one point, Bam Bam is sent over the top rope, which in WCW is a disqualification.
Yeah.
Not a disqualification in WWF. When did WCW change its rules so sending your opponent over the top rope would not result in a DQ? That's what I want to know.
Okay, so at Bash 94, were
still
there
a
any,
DQ.
Still a DQ?
Yeah, they mentioned it.
Because I was going to say, I would think that maybe in Hogan's contract, because he liked to send people over top ropes, and that's going to stifle a lot of storylines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a good question. Let's see here.
There's one thing I noticed during this match is that all the commentators, especially Vince, seem way more excited about the Bulldogs match the next night on Raw against The Undertaker than they were about this match against Bam Bam.
Hey, look, man, either you've bought this pay-per-view or you haven't. The next night, he's got to boost them ratings. So I think that's why he's Vince McMahon right there.
But I didn't feel like they spent any time hyping the match that was actually happening.
No, look, man, it's Bulldog versus Bam Bam. It's all good. There's nothing on the line here. Bam Bam missed a moonsault.
Yeah.
God, I love Bam Bam.
Yeah, Bam Bam was great.
He was rad. And Bulldog was rad, too.
Yeah.
He won with a power slam, which is like an opening move now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Braun has his big power slam.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Bam Bam always had great ring gear.
Oh, I know. I know. I loved his ring gear. He was great. Bam Bam was the man. Then we had an odd Bob Backlund promo.
You ever seen the episode of The Simpsons where Homer does a program to expand his vocabulary? You know what I'm talking about?
That's what
Bob Backlund's promo reminded me of.
Yeah. What did he say? Don't desecrate me. Something like that.
Exacerbate.
Yeah. Then people chuckle because it sounds like masturbate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. What did you think of... So I had seen a little bit of Dean Douglas.
Yeah, I had too.
You had too. Man, I can't like... It's a, number one. So the next up, we had Dean Douglas versus Razor Ramon.
I thought this was a pretty solid match.
Kind of odd that Dean Douglas was the ring announcer for Razor Ramon, though. He said, I'm going to present to you my failure of an opponent, Razor Ramon. And then they cued the music and he came out.
Yeah.
He announced his opponent. That was odd. Number one, kind of a bummer to watch this knowing that Razor Ramon didn't like Shane Douglas, knowing that Scott Hall thought he was a prick. Number two, it was a decent match. You thought this was a match of the night, though.
It's up there.
Yeah, it's. I mean, no, this is, to me, this is a solid number two. But it just is a bummer because it's Dean Douglas.
You know, really,
I can't stand that.
What's really weird is this was after the formation of ECW.
Oh, I know. It's weird.
When he tossed aside the NWA World
title.
He was
so diehard, I'm ECW. But I think this was before it was Extreme Championship Wrestling. I think, really? When did they?
This was after. It was 93 or 94 when he won the tournament for the NWA title. And they rechristened Eastern Championship Wrestling into Extreme Championship Wrestling. That was before this.
No, I know. Okay, so when he threw it down, they were still Eastern. And I think it took a little bit longer than we thought to actually become Extreme.
Oh, I don't know. I was reading up on it last night. And before he went to WWF for this tenure, there was talk, you know, in the Wikipedia thing, granted.
Yeah, no, sure.
Him had matches against the Sandman.
Yeah, Sandman was there as a surfing guy when they were still Eastern.
Mm.
I just remember the only reason I mentioned this is because I spent a couple of like Saturday nights, because I'm a nerd, watching EC, like from the beginning, ECW.
Yeah.
And from when he threw the title down to when they actually became Extreme Championship Wrestling, I felt was a bit more of a process than just an overnight thing.
Yeah.
But I could be totally wrong. I could be. When did it? ECW become, because they were even doing extreme things before they called themselves.
Oh, I know.
Let's see here. Well, sometime in 94.
Yeah. Anyways, that was the impression I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're talking here about Sandman using his Singapore cane
on
Shane Douglas.
Five.
Cactus Jack was in ECW before he left for WWF.
Come on.
Oh, on August 30th of 94, 95, on edition of NWA Eastern Championship Wrestling, Gordon announced that he was folding Eastern Championship Wrestling in its place, forming Extreme Championship Wrestling.
And when was that?
August 30th, I guess, of 94.
August of 94. So right after that was this match. Because this was, what was this?
This is September 95. This is a year later.
Okay. Okay, forget all that then. So, yeah, no, that was kind of weird. Like, he went, because I know, you know, Vince was offering a ton of money.
Yeah.
And so he went there. God, was he even there a year?
I don't think so.
I don't think he was even there a year. And he seemed to... I don't know. I wonder if it's the kind of thing where he just couldn't... Because whenever I hear interviews with Shane Douglas, he comes across as a really intelligent
guy. Yeah. He doesn't really seem to care about burning bridges.
I wonder if it's that, or if it's he didn't care about forging relationships.
That could be.
Because there's kind of a difference between the two.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just felt like he didn't, like... You know, when he was talking about the clique, like, he, according to him, he ran into the clique and they were being pricks. And I don't know, he just wasn't into it, which is fine. They were probably pricks. But then, like, the way Scott Hall tells it, like, nobody liked him and everybody thought he was overrated.
Yeah.
And that might have just been Scott Hall. You never know what colors his perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in WWF for less than a year.
Because he kept on getting hired. Look, he was in, you know, ECW, or he was in WCW. And then he went to ECW, then WWF, then back to ECW.
Actually, it was WCW, then WWF, then back to WCW, then ECW, then WWF, then back to ECW, then back to WCW.
Yeah, so he went all over the place.
Yeah,
so
that wasn't that uncommon.
Yeah.
In the late 80s, early 90s, for people to go back and
forth. Steamboat did that. He went back and forth a lot.
Companies all the time.
And like, especially with WCW, there was always new head guys. And so I think that made it easier for people to go back and forth, because they'd have a clean slate after a year of, you know, a new head guy. But no, I liked Shane Douglas as a wrestler. I thought he was good. And I really liked him, his heel persona in ECW. I was a huge franchise fan.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, you know, and I can always watch Scott Hall matches.
Oh, yeah.
I love
Scott
Hall's
one of my
matches.
Favorites.
Anything discus he does is fantastic.
I know.
I love the discus.
No one worked an arm like Scott Hall.
Yeah. This was kind of interesting. So there was a ref bump. Oh, meanwhile, Cornette and Yoko, it keeps on going back to this thread of Cornette trying to find
a partner. Yeah.
A partner. They're talking to Mabel, who didn't he have a, did Mabel have a match during this pay-per-view?
No,
he didn't. Okay. So I wonder if he got paid for just that backstage segment. So they're talking to Mabel, trying to get into it. That's surprising, because Mabel doesn't have a match. So it's not like, oh, hey, I'm winded, or, oh, I'm beat up. It's no, I don't want an opportunity at the two top major titles. I don't want to do that. Maybe, wait. So was part of Gorilla's sanctioning of the match, if the person in Owen's place picked up the world title,
They would be champion.
They wouldn't have to kick that over to Owen or something, right?
No.
Oh, okay. Weird.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, this was a decent match.
Yeah.
Some good back and forth. Mm-hmm. A ref bump.
Mm-hmm. I did like also when Dean Douglas was coming down, where he said he just called everybody a failure.
Yeah.
Because his gimmick was education guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He would do these vignettes where he would teach lessons.
Yeah, he'd be standing in front of a chalkboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the ref bump when Dean Douglas pushes Razor Ramon into the ref. Scott Hall hits the Razor's Edge.
Mm-hmm.
But Backlund is holding on to the ref.
Right.
So he can't get up and make the pinfall.
But then for some reason, X-Pac runs in.
1-2-3 kid.
And
and counts the pinfall. But he's not a ref.
So
he's X-Pac.
But Scott Hall doesn't see that it's X-Pac. He thinks that he won because he heard the count.
Yeah, he gets up, sees that it's X-Pac, and pushes him out of the ring.
He goes flying, too. He pushes him, and X-Pac sells the crap out of it. I was very confused. Was X-Pac trying to help Razor Ramon? He's not a sanctioned ref.
No.
He wasn't even wearing a ref shirt.
I'm still not sure, and the commentary team really wasn't illuminating the situation at all. I didn't feel.
Yeah.
So anyways,
Dean Douglas got the win with a roll-up.
And a handful of tights.
Yeah.
And then Razor and 1-2-3 Kid were you know, obviously there's a tense situation going on there between the two of them.
You're not a ref, man.
Yeah, you should be making pinfall.
You're just like my buddy.
Counts when you're not a ref.
Like, you would think X-Pac would know that. Oh, man.
I don't know.
This must be a bigger story there. I don't know.
Probably.
Cut to Doc Hendricks. This is his
fourth appearance.
Breaking news.
No breaking news. He was selling stuff.
That is breaking, though.
He was trying to sell Shawn Michaels hats and glasses and apparently blank VHS tapes because there's no label on it.
There's a couple appearances of a blank VHS tape here. But this was the first appearance of male stripper paraphernalia for sale because Shawn, who in the living hell would buy Shawn Michaels sunglasses and cap, stripper cap? It was so stupid. Why? And it was like $20.
I know.
Then that god ugly T-shirt that Medusa was modeling was $20.
But you
got like $100 today.
But you got a free blank videotape or VHS tape with it, so that's like a $3 value.
You can illegally record the pay-per-view and sell it on the bootleg market.
Exactly, tape trading.
Tape trading in the.
Well, it's funny because they said it was like classic matches or something like that. It's like, we'll slap a Coliseum video label on that tape. So it's not obviously just a blank VHS tape you're holding up.
You know what's funny, too, is that if you look closely, I swear, I remember this. Maybe it's not true. But I swear I sort of kind of half paying attention to the blank VHS tape because, you notice there's no label on it. And it looks like a 5-minute tape. You
know, one of those with like the giant classic matches is 30 seconds to 10 matches.
Exactly. They had no idea what they were doling out, man.
No, it's weird that you had to call to buy stuff.
Who the hell do you want to? I know.
And it was weird, too. They had the superstar hotline, like after the matches, you can call and supposedly talk to the people who just wrestled.
and what they cut to? They cut to
Godwin.
Million Dollar Man.
With slop on his head.
Slop or vomit all over him, yelling into the phone.
Yes.
That's not a selling point. I don't want to be yelled at by Ted DiBiase, who's covered in slop.
Well, I mean, if you're talking to him on the phone, you don't know he's covered in slop.
Do you think
still.
They just did like a recording of him being mad and then you'd call? You'd pay money.
Yeah.
To call and listen to a recording of DiBiase
guarantee
yelling.
You that's exactly what it was.
Oh, man.
If you were a WWF superstar who just wrestled a match, would you want to sit there for 20 minutes talking to random people on the phone?
Look, man, I'm earning my paycheck.
You earn your paycheck out there in the ring.
Could you imagine?
I'm not saying you wouldn't do it. I'm asking, would you want
what
to?
What kind of buzz there would be? You're like, dude, I just literally talked to $1 Million Man. He's hot, right? He
spent 5 minutes
vomit.
Complaining to me about having a slop on his head.
So I was trying.
He said
to ask
he smells
him,
terrible.
Yeah, I was trying to ask him about rolling with Andre back in the day, but all he wanted to talk about was pig vomit.
Yeah. How much did it cost to make the $1 Million belt?
Yeah, I know. He's like, oh, I'm just mad.
I smell horrible. Ha 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 ha.
Oh man.
So, anyways, Doc Hendricks trying to sell stuff.
Yeah. Then we had an interview with the dudes with attitudes. HBK and Diesel, Kevin Nash.
Diesel didn't really seem like he cared.
No, man. He probably was already sending out feelers. Him and Scott Hall. He was like, man, Hogan got how much to go over there? Man, I wonder what they'd pay for me. Mm-hmm. What? Oh, yeah. Great job, HBK.
Dudes
too
with attitudes.
Sweet.
Yeah, I know. what was the line he used? Was it the champs with all the straps or something like that?
I don't know. It's not a loose rhyme.
Yeah.
Barely.
Or is it two chaps with all the straps?
Oh, maybe.
Something like that.
HBK wore chaps to the ring. It was cheesy. Like, and then they put dudes with attitudes awkwardly on their ring gear.
I know.
I think Sean had it on his butt.
He did.
Oh, that was bad. Why is that? That's not cool.
No.
No. Anyways, then
I guess it's mid-90s cool.
Yeah. Then they interviewed Bret Hart.
Before his match with Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
It felt like he was an extra in Only God Forgives. Mm-hmm. Like the lighting was all weird.
It seemed like, maybe 3 or 4 years before this, they would do these type of interviews, but have them in front of a green screen. Mm-hmm. They'd have like a graphic of from, their personalized graphic for the character behind them.
Yeah.
But they just forgot the green screen.
Well,
they
couldn't afford it anymore.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford
it. Okay, we'll just stand in front of this curtain and talk for a couple minutes about how Pierre Lafitte stole your jacket.
Yeah. And he had his goofy. I don't get. Here's my thing about. I mentioned this to you off camera. This is what Bret Hart should have been. Bret Hart should be number one on every list that us and What Culture does. Top 10 WWF superstars who are never world champ. It should always be number one, Bret Hart.
If Bret Hart and Razor Ramon's careers were swapped,
yeah,
it made perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it would have made absolutely perfect sense. You're right about that. He should have been the guy who was always the underrated upper mid-card guy.
Yes.
But he was the safe choice to put the title on. And he was supposed to be, he just ended up being the ultimate transitional champion. Mm-hmm. That was Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're getting all sorts of crap in the comments.
Well, we got a whole match of his to talk about, so.
Yeah, but you know what? I really like this match.
It was okay.
I thought it was a hot match. The crowd was hot for it by the end.
I know.
There were some really brutal spots.
I know. It was a fast-paced match. I'll give you that.
Well, here's the thing. The brutal spots were botches. That's the thing. Because Pierre Lafitte, he wasn't a very good.
Well, hold on.
Carl Oulé.
Hold on. He had to wrestle with an eye patch the whole time. Okay.
Okay.
Try wrestling with one
right.
eye.
You're right. You don't think that was a gimmick, the eye patch?
No.
Like a bunch of little holes in it?
No.
Because you could see if there's like a ton of microscopic holes you could see.
Yeah, I know. I don't think that's the case, though.
They're like.
That sounds too sensible.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
So the match, Bret Hart. So they play some brief recaps. Of why they're feuding, and it's because Jean-Pierre Lafitte stole Bret Hart's jacket.
Yeah.
So he's supposed to be a pirate.
It was like a gentle locker room rib.
Yeah, I know.
That just went over.
That happened to make it out in front of cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
And Bret Hart took it way too seriously. Yeah,
of course, he took it way too seriously. What a surprise. That interview, though, was weird because the interview was like the cameraman. They're in the set. They're in the house set. They're inside the house.
Oh, yeah. They're in like gorilla position.
They're gorilla
because
position.
His music hits right as his interview ends and he walks through the front door of the house.
Kind of like, you know, creatively ballsy, by the way, to show us that the house, in fact, was simply a facade, not a true house.
But I think he was the only one to walk through the front door, wasn't he?
No, well, Alundra Blaze walked back through the other way.
But, I mean,
Think you're right. Everybody else came through the garage curtain.
This was Bret Hart's house.
They should have had a garage sale going on at the time selling blank video cassettes.
There you go. And, in your house, triple header T-shirts.
That was it. Was that there? That's what they called the actual card.
Yeah.
Why did they call it triple header?
Because the three titles were on the line.
Okay. That's dumb.
Yeah.
Anyways,
back to the Bret Hart match. The match starts out with Bret Hart nearly killing himself.
Yeah, he launched himself in a suicide dive, and somehow. Like, launched himself over.
Yeah, he jumps completely over Lafitte.
Did he?
And realizes, once he goes over Lafitte, that his trajectory is going to lead him to land on his head.
Yeah.
So he quickly, like, swung his legs around. So he landed flat on his back, but over the mats.
Yeah, he was on concrete at that point. Yeah, that didn't look good.
No, and he grimaced.
Yeah.
Understandably.
You see his face, and he looks like he's 60. He always looked like he was 60.
I told you this before we started because you said you really liked this match. I thought it was okay. Bret Hart does two things really well. What?
He pulled a Trent. Go on.
Oh, yeah. No one ran to the corner turnbuckles like Bret Hart.
No, oh,
especially
yeah.
chest first.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
he never crushed his sternum, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because every time he did that, I always grimace because it looks like it hurts. Mm-hmm. It hurts. And he's a very good seller.
He's a good seller. This match had a really good pace to it. The match built really, really well.
In terms of pace, yes.
In terms of pace, yes. Absolutely.
I had some problems with the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, when you're starting off, when your catalyst is stealing a guy's jacket, then storytelling.
Well, there were a couple spots in this match that they could have built off of for storytelling, including Lafitte doing a Trent and launching himself over the top rope and landing on nothing but mat.
Hitting nothing, yeah.
But after that, I thought, oh, Bret, the great tactician,
mm-hmm.
the ring general,
right.
is going to go in there and start working the back.
Yeah.
He does like one backbreaker and that's it.
Yeah.
That's like a story ready to tell right there.
Yeah.
And it sets him up for the sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Didn't do it. And
yeah.
I was like, Bret, do that. That's storytelling.
Yeah.
That's good strategy. Do it. Didn't do it. And I haven't seen all of Bret Hart's matches.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a good share of them.
Yeah, sure.
I always feel like whenever, because he gets beat up a lot.
Yeah, sure.
But when he finally gets some offense in, especially like in the middle of the match, would be one chunk where he gets a lot of offense off. And it's always the same moves and always in the same order.
Yeah.
And that bothers me because he's supposed to be this fantastic in-ring worker.
I know.
And that's what, I think more than anything, that's what's always kind of bugged me about Bret Hart. His one match against, my favorite match of his is against Piper at WrestleMania 8, I think. And it's because it doesn't fit the same template that a lot of his matches do. It starts out kind of technical, and by the end, it's like a really brutal brawl.
Yeah.
And it's a really good match.
I remember, I'd like to watch it again, the Chris Benoit Bret Hart match from the Owen Hart tribute thing on WCW. It was like the one time when Bret Hart was so turned, like he was super turned on in terms of like the matches. Like him and Benoit put on a spectacular match.
Yeah, I need to
match.
Watch that again,
that
too.
That was really, really
but
good.
But I guess I'll speak specifically about like early, mid-90s Bret Hart.
Sure, yeah, of course, yeah.
Where it seemed like a lot of his matches kind of played out in similar fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like but, I said, he always sold really well, and he could work a really fast pace. So it's not like his matches were ever boring.
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. Anyways, Brett ended up going over with the sharpshooter, of course. And I was into the match. It's a Bret Hart match. I was into
it. It was fast paced. It was engaging.
Yeah,
I wouldn't argue against any.
I mean,
of those
here's
points.
My thing. People put Bret Hart at the God tier.
I know.
And my only contention is he wasn't at God tier. He's not up there with so many other guys.
Agreed.
He's like in a, I think he's like, to me, like when you're going up the totem pole, Bret Hart isn't even past Eddie Guerrero or Chris Benoit. You know, Eddie Guerrero's or Bret Hart's down here.
Yeah. Agreed.
So, but yet he was world champ. I know the other two were, but Bret Hart was known to have carried the company on his back. And I don't know. I just feel like he gets a little too much credit.
Agreed. And I think if it weren't for that, then you know I don't think we would consider him overrated in the least.
I would be like, man, he should have been world champion.
Yeah.
He should have been huge.
Yeah.
But then he was, and I'm like, no, he shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Cut to Doc Hendricks, fifth and sadly last Doc
last
Hendricks
time
appearance.
Until the recap package at the end of the show.
That was very Doc Hendricks heavy too.
Yes, it was. So Doc is interviewing Jim Cornette and Gorilla Monsoon, and British Bulldog standing there, and he is in fact replacing Owen Hart in this match.
In my opinion,
and Bulldog changed his pants.
That was well, of course, but that was best value. Bulldog. Bulldog was the man. He was cool, dude.
He was cool.
I like Bulldog. Anyways, yeah, so boom, Jim Cornette's very happy.
After that, Alundra Blaze came out through the fake house modeling the really ugly t-shirt for the
show.
She's
such a cutie pie. She was so, like, charismatic.
Yep.
I love Medusa. She's fantastic. And again, you know, that triple header shirt was $20. And if it didn't look good on Alundra Blaze, it wasn't going to look good on anybody.
It was like everything wrong with 90s design.
Did you appreciate, though, that like, so she also, yeah, it was. She had the VHS tape, the free label-less VHS tape.
Yes.
And she started threatening to throw it in the audience. And I was like, that's going to kill someone. Not kill them, but that's going to leave a mark.
Especially if you throw it like that. You got to do it like a
she
frisbee.
She was like doing this. And then eventually she went sort of very
gently tossed it. If you did it lightly like a frisbee, it's okay. But if you throw it.
I feel like
overhand.
You do it underhand, like just let it take itself.
Well,
even this is too much. This
well,
right
see,
here.
If you do it like this, then there's less. You can't get as much oomph on it that way as you can if you throw it like that.
Well, this is going to kill somebody.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you throw it like a frisbee, not so much.
Not so much. And for guy in the front row, big guy looks like he can take a shot from a VHS tape.
Yes,
she did the right.
So long
thing.
As the corners don't hit,
and
that's
then
where
she,
it's denser.
Then she
it's gonna hurt.
She pulled an NWO, took off the shirt to reveal just an Alundra Blaze shirt underneath, so she claimed herself. And she kind of folded up the shirt a little bit and then threw it, and I swear it didn't hit anybody.
Could be.
Like, we didn't see it fall.
It's like a metaphor for the show.
We didn't see it fall in the foreground of the camera, but the look on her face made me think that she didn't put enough strength in the t-shirt
maybe
throw.
Maybe she was the throwing the VHS was in her head still.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking
so
too.
So she didn't
want
to overthrow the t-shirt for fear of hurting somebody somehow.
I feel like on the other end of that shot, the reverse angle of that would have been somebody going.
Yeah, trying to reach over the guardrail to try to pick it up.
And then she's like, bye, and then she bolts through the front door.
Yeah.
Out come the from the garage curtain.
Yokozuna and
Yokozuna
the British Bulldog.
And the Bulldog. Yoko was huge at this time.
Physically, he
was massive.
Yeah.
It was uncomfortable to watch.
It was. After that, we get Shawn Michaels and Diesel.
Mm-hmm.
Dudes with attitudes.
They came out individually, though. Shawn Michaels came out. He did his little stripper dance. And then Diesel came out. And yeah, he looked, for being the WWF champion.
That was a look on his face.
It was. That, incidentally, that was not the look he always had on his face. Like earlier in 94, he had some intensity to him.
Yeah, but now it's...
I'm not getting paid enough for this stuff. That was a Scott Hall. So anyways.
So it was actually a relatively fun match. I mean,
yeah, it was.
Anything Shawn Michaels involved with is going to be fun because he's so fast in the ring.
Oh, I know, and he's so much fun, and he sells like in a not cartoonish manner.
Yes,
like it's great.
There's this cool spot where HBK climbed up on Diesel's shoulders and did a splash off it.
That was cool. That was neat.
HBK at one point avoids
barely.
Yeah, no. Bonsai drop from Yokozuna,
which is Yokozuna climbing up to, like, you know, trying his damnest to climb to the second rope
and then falling on his butt
like, and the problem is when you're Shawn Michaels and you're down there and you see giant taint, you think that it's gonna go up a bit, and that's no, it basically just land, he just came down,
yeah,
and Shawn Michaels barely got out from being inside
of his ass. Shawn Michaels goes, tags Diesel, the dudes with attitudes send the Bulldog into Yokozuna. And then Yokozuna falls on top of Bulldog.
Right.
HBK hits Cornette. Yokozuna hits Diesel with a Samoan drop.
Again, he picks him up best he can and then just sort of immediately starts
falls backwards.
Yeah.
So everybody's in the ring. HBK super kicks Yokozuna.
Mm-hmm.
Bulldog power slams Diesel, but HBK breaks the pin up with a top rope elbow.
Right.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
And then Owen shows up.
Yeah.
So apparently Cornette was right. He was at the arena.
He was.
And then he eats a jackknife powerbomb from Diesel and gets pinned.
Yeah.
So the dudes with attitudes win by pinning somebody who actually wasn't officially in the match.
Yeah.
Winning the tag team championships.
Right.
But here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Did you notice that HBK and Diesel were holding one of the two tag team titles? Where's the other belt at? Do they have to share one belt?
Well, it didn't matter because the next day on Raw, the tag team champion successfully appealed that decision.
Mm.
They got the tag titles back, and that night were defeated by the Smoking Guns for the tag team championships. So the answer to your question is
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
That's the first thing I thought. I was like, why are they sharing one belt? Are there supposed to be two of them?
Well, you know, yeah, but Owen had the other one, right?
I don't know.
They didn't give it to the Bulldog, like Owen.
Maybe not. Maybe, you know, that would explain it.
Owen travels with a belt.
There was no explanation, so I was curious.
Do they travel with their belts these days?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Man, they were treating them when we...
Wasn't there the story a couple years back when Dolph was Intercontinental Champion that he, like, his bag got lost and his belt was in it?
Oh, maybe. I just know, remember when we went to interview AJ, they were treating that lineage title with freaking, you know, it was in like in a bag. There was a special belt guy.
Yeah.
I didn't know if maybe some belts, like, you know, who cares about the U.S. title?
Yeah.
But, you know, the WWE title, yeah.
So that was your main event.
Like, when I picture Brock Lesnar going backstage with his Universal title, I picture him throwing it to somebody.
Yeah. And next time he sees it when he's scheduled to perform, yeah. Entirely possible.
Exactly.
It probably depends on the
Halloween prop for him.
It probably depends on the wrestler.
Yeah.
So that was the show. Not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Not great.
Yeah. It was a good snapshot of where they were.
Yeah.
When, you know, I mean, they were sort of on the precipice of really hard times because they were about to lose Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and Razor Ramon, two of their bigger stars. They were about to lose them.
Yeah.
And in return, we sort of watched this, but so then that sort of landed on Brett and HBK,
yeah,
96.
That was the main event for WrestleMania that year.
Yeah. But, man, it was pretty thin. It was pretty thin for a spell. And then, you know.
Towards the end of that year, they brought in Foley.
Right. Mankind. That's right.
And then Sid started doing stuff in the main event towards the end of that year.
Right. See, that's right.
He beat Michaels for the belt at Survivor Series in 96.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, because Diesel left in March.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, it was March the next year.
Well, Scott Hall left first.
Yeah. Was Scott Hall at that main? Did he leave?
I don't remember him at Mania 12.
I don't know.
Because Diesel fought Undertaker at that one.
Yeah, and he lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's probably one of, if not his last matches.
Could be, yeah. Wow. They did a great video recap.
Yeah, it was impressive editing to get that put together so quickly.
Oh, I know. They did a good job.
Considering it was all, you know, like tape-based.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
They probably have a truck dedicated to a linear editing machine.
Probably.
So the final Doc Hendricks count, five appearances.
Five Michael P.S. Hayes appearances. You know what's weird, though, about Doc Hendricks? He really does come off like a different person.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like Michael
Hayes.
There's none of this. He really feels like a different person.
Did he seem like a real journalist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, big time. Are you kidding me? Expert salesman, too, with the Shawn Michaels stripper kit.
Yeah, if they hadn't said this number is no longer in service, I might have called.
I would have dialed up. And then I would have dialed up DiBiase to be like, how are you feeling with that slop on your head? You know, is that still a pain? Still getting that out? Anyways. So that brings us to next week. We have three. Okay, so this past, just yesterday, when we're filming this anyway, so this past week, Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, famed wrestling journalist and critiquer guy.
Critic.
Gave Omega Okada 2 6¼
6¼ stars.
6¼ stars, which I think is like the most he's ever given any match ever.
I believe so.
Which is fantastic. We got to sit there and watch history, Larson.
Yes.
And everybody now on Twitter, the poor guy is, what? I don't get it. It's Japan. Why are you so biased? All that kind of crap. But anyways, I agree with him. I say 6¼.
Hell, it was a very good match.
I give it 7.5 stars. But anyways, in keeping with, you know, us witnessing one of the best matches perhaps in the history of pro wrestling.
Yes.
We decided to take a look at what other matches Mr. Meltzer gave 5 or more stars to.
Yes, that were readily available on the WWE Network.
Right, exactly. Because we want all you guys to be able to watch this. So, up for vote on the Patreon $10 and up mark, we've got Clash of Champions 6, Rage and Cajun, which featured Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, best 2 out of 3 falls match.
Yeah, classic. We have Clash of Champions 9, New York Knockout. This is my personal favorite. This is what I want you guys to vote for, so I know you probably won't. This is Terry Funk versus Ric Flair in an I Quit match.
Yes.
So this was a program that was after the Steamboat series that Flair had. And then finally we have, which might be public, I don't know, this might be the favorite, Bad Blood 97, which was, of course, Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker casket match.
Correct. No, Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell, yeah. The very first Hell in a Cell match. So we put this up for vote, and you have decided the winner is...
Bad Blood 97, you chose wisely.
Well done. All right, so you have your homework for the week. Go ahead and check out that particular pay-per-view, and we'll be reviewing it next week right here at Going In Raw.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.